is capable to shape these futures, this future making in the city? Who participates in this future making?
Welcome to Zetnopot, Rahel Jud on the microphone.
Today, Sabrina Stallone sits next to me. Thank you, Sabrina, for taking the time to do this interview.
Of course, happy to have you.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
Sabrina is an urban anthropologist and a PhD candidate at the University of Bern. In her research, she is concerned with feminist appropriations and designs of urban open space in city areas. But to be honest, this still sounds a bit cryptic to me. Sabrina, can you elaborate more on what your research is about?
Yes, it does sound a little cryptic, doesn't it? So I would say that what I'm mainly concerned with are future scenarios in urban development and how different communities in the city deal with these often very statistical, abstract, and not least profit-oriented future images, and how they arrange themselves with them, how they pose resistance to them, how they imagine alternatives. And in Zurich, where I do my research, the urban future is very much shaped by the imaginary of growth. And growth here can be economic or otherwise. So in its current master plan, Zurich 2040, Zurich predicts a population growth by 25% within 20 years, which would amount to roughly 500,000 inhabitants by 2040. Right now it's around 435,000, I think. I don't have the exact number. This prediction is based on existing statistics and model structures that extrapolate these numbers into the future. So this prediction of population growth dictates the city's development well beyond just population growth, right? So where to build infrastructure, schools, hospitals, the anticipation of problems and chances, so opportunities and threats that come with this type of increase in inhabitants is all in that master plan. But as often happens with these future scenarios, and the literature shows as well, as detailed and granular as these scenarios may be, they are still vague. We don't know who these people are expected to be. We don't know who these future inhabitants are of the city. So I conducted my field work on precisely, let's say, this conundrum. So who are these people and where are they going to go? And I did my fieldwork on some of the city's largest land reserves, which are land plots formulated in the future tense, so to speak. They are spaces that are thought of in the future that are very much so used in the present as well. These are not empty spaces just waiting for something to happen. There's very much stuff happening there at the moment. There are urban commons, there are designated areas for sex work, there are housing for refugees is there, artist studios. These spaces are very densely used already. So there's all these different usages that have to coexist and that sort of manage to coexist as well. So I conducted my fieldwork with activists, feminist and environmental activists, for instance, working on these sites, campaign teams for political referendums, migrants, other dwellers, but also experts who shape this idea of growth in the city of Zurich in various ways. So statisticians, people from the political sphere, from administrations, from the municipality, and questions that I've thought about and that have sort of, you know, accompanied me throughout this research have been who is capable to shape these futures, this future making in the city? Who participates in this future making? With what tools, in which places, with which materiality, so to speak? And with that also the question, how is this capacity to shape the future and to imagine the future shaped by social markers of gender, race, or in the case of Switzerland and Zurich, by citizenship status? So yeah, these have been the questions I've dealt with.
Thank you. Now I have an idea of what your research looks like. But how did you come up with the topic in first place?
So I guess that cities as local centers of power of different in different ways have always interested me. And before doing this research, I've had the opportunity to do research in Palestine and Israel and Italy. And somehow I always ended up doing research in cities. I think this contradiction that is always inherent to cities as sites of let's say, sites of inequalities and at the same time of opportunities is something that really has always struck me. For instance, the idea that cities can be places where we can think about how to make the city more feminist, or how to think of social justice, or how to look at the city as a scale within which we can think about climate justice as well. So this has always interested me, in opposition to things like control and repression and capital accumulation that very much also happen here. Actually, for my doctoral research, which is this research that I just described falls within, I wanted to go elsewhere. I wanted to go to Palestine and research in a planned city there. And then when the pandemic happened, I was stuck in Zurich and I wasn't able to leave. I became increasingly interested with how, even in times of crisis and uncertainty, urban planning and the city and the municipality still held on very firmly to these ideas about what the future of the city would look like. Even in times when we would reconsider if being so densely together in a city was still viable or a good option, when we rethought how to work, like the places of work, how they should look like, we still very much held on to this sort of growth as usual, business as usual idea that the city has had. So the city really didn't really change much about their strategy. You would still see billboards everywhere about new office buildings being built. And so I became increasingly interested with the persistence of narratives about urban futures. Even here, in the place where I sort of got stuck because of a crisis and because of increasing uncertainty.
You mentioned it, urban futures, future cities. These are real buzzwords that immediately bring a picture to mind. But I can well imagine that there are also many stereotypical assumptions circulating about this subject area. Is that true? And do you also want to dispel a few stereotypes with your research?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. I think it is very much a buzzword topic and a trendy topic right now, and you hear it everywhere. Of course, we hear it from the UN, the future is urban, there will be so and so many people living in cities.
And just the media landscape.
Exactly. It's constantly in the media. And of course, here I'm a bit biased because I follow specifically this topic, and I follow it specifically in Zurich, where it is very present. But I think some things can be said about this topic on a larger scale. The growth of the city as something that is inevitable and unstoppable is a narrative. We hear it all the time. Cities are going to grow, megacities, from megacities to a city as small as Zurich, which is just expected to grow by 100,000 inhabitants by 2040. So 25% increase in growth. It is a very persistent way of looking at the city that, as I was saying before, holds true and keeps this persistence even in times where everything seems to be upside down, right? So with pandemics, climate crisis, now the crisis of the banking sector, and possibly fewer people coming into the city, specifically of Zurich. So these things sort of stay true, and there are a lot of rituals and practices that make sure that these ideas and these linear future scenarios remain believable, right? And that has a lot to do with politics, with expectations, with effective aspects of it all. So if we think of these statistics that are made about these predictions about how the city is going to grow, the variables that we use to come up with these statistics, or the time frames in the past based on which we come up with model structures to sort of extrapolate the past into the future, these are very much man-made, or let's say woman-made, but mostly man-made, as my field research has shown. And these are all things that play into the construction of these future scenarios. And they are made and constructed based on normative values of what we want the city of the future to be. What are the things that we liked about the past? And what are the periods that we liked about the past of the city? And how do we want to sort of create a future based on them? And then I think this will be sort of one of the main myths that I would like to dispel, that this inevitable growth into the future is also very much something that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because we keep reiterating it and creating numbers and facts that do something with us effectively that lead us to believe that. And then on sort of an interim sphere between the macro and the micro, I think it is really interesting there to look at the work of Arjuna Padurai, who's written this book, The Future as Cultural Fact, a couple of years back. He makes this distinction between the economic actor and the cultural actor, which I think is really interesting. So it's based on insights from the anthropology of time. In this distinction between economic and cultural actor, he criticizes that in how we imagine the capacity of people to imagine their own future, we think of people who are economic actors, who are people of the future, so planners, investors, municipalities, economists, right, who really believe in this and who have the capacity and the skills to imagine a future. And then there's a cultural actor, that really comes from classical anthropology of time, right, where we think like the cultural actor is about traditions and customs and about the past. And I think it's really interesting to look at this distinction, not only in the very classical idea of how we do ethnography far away, where we sort of other, this temporal othering of people, but it also happens in, it happens everywhere. It happens in cities like Zurich. It happens in cities elsewhere where we have this idea that there are planners and they really know how to think about the future. And then there are sort of common people who wants the city to stay as is and don't want anything to ever change. And what I've seen in my fieldwork is that a lot of people, almost everyone I talked to, had their own ideas for the future. It was just very different and using very different tools than statistics and facts and numbers and all of these things. So I think there it is interesting to see that this capacity to imagine a future is very much there for a lot of people, also on and around these land reserves, because they do something with people, let's say. They sort of give them this capacity to imagine an urban otherwise. But the way in which these voices are heard are very different. So some people are heard and some people manage to make their story, their narrative about the future believable, and others don't really.
And do you think, can we generalize for all the cities, or do you speak of a specific geographical area where these specific myths of cities can be dispelled?
I would be very skeptical to generalize as an anthropologist, as you know. There is a lot of discourse in this realm of urban futures, for instance, about the distinction between NIMBYs and YIMBYs. So not in my own backyards, and yes, in my own backyards, right? So people who are against development and people who are pro-development. And that goes in the same direction of this economic and cultural actor, right? The economic actors want development. They do believe that, for instance, more construction and more housing will lead to more opportunities for people. And then distinction to the NIMBY, who is, you know, sort of backward and wants things to stay the way that they are. And I think that to a certain extent, these are ideas that pop up in many, many different cities. The specific aspects about Zurich that are particularly interesting is that the urban political discourse is very much shaped by these future scenarios and by population growth. The fact that population growth can be seen as both an opportunity and a threat, and which one of the two dominates the discourse kind of differs based on the time and who you talk to, that is very specific, because population growth in a lot of other cities in the world could not possibly mean an opportunity and a chance.
Of course.
It is often seen as a threat. So it has got to do with the demographic that it is expected. Who is this future population going to be? It's never really spelled out, but there is a certain expectation that it's going to be a certain type of person. And the fact that with direct democratic practices in Switzerland, we are very much part of this urban political discourse as voting subjects of the city, that also creates a very specific idea, imagination, that we as residents, or better said, as citizens of the city, can be part of what the future of the city looks like, right? And about the direct democracy, sort of the last point that I wanted to make, I think these land reserves where I've worked, where urban commons emerge and new ideas and new plans, alternatives to urban imaginaries can arise, they're seen also in the literature, they talked about as spaces of possibility, spaces onto which wish images can be put on. I think there's something really romanticizing about this idea, because the power structures and the normative practices of participation that exist outside of these spaces seep into these spaces very much. And in Switzerland, that has a lot to do with direct democracy. The practices of how we participate in the public sphere are very much shaped by our voting rights. So, for people who do not hold these voting rights, participation even in these spaces becomes a little more difficult. This is something to keep in mind, that even though these spaces can be laboratories to think about how to do an urban otherwise and how to imagine a different future, they are still very much part of the city's structures.
Would you have a concrete example from your field research?
You mean in terms of these direct democratic practices?
Yes, how exactly.
I guess that part of these direct democratic practices that I observed revolved around a referendum that was taken up against an urban development project at the end of 2019, and the vote happened in September 2020. And this referendum was taken up by a group of campaigners consisting of feminist and environmental activists, but also association members of this urban commons on the lot that I observed, neighbors, just interested parties that wanted to participate, right? And I think one of the things that was very visible there is that, for instance, during campaign meetings, the very subtle practices of how interaction worked was shaped by, let's say, the very much Swiss culture and tradition of associations, the Vereinskultur. I think for people who fall outside or come from a different, let's say, political culture, it was very difficult to even participate in these groups because some things were unspoken. It was a lot of tacit knowledge that went into how do you make a campaign happen within the system. Mm-hmm. Even if it's subversive, controversial, takes up a different perspective than the, let's say, more tame municipal one, it still is shaped by these things. For instance, Swiss German is spoken, certain ideas about how a vote or a decision is taken within these structures is very much the same as in conventional spaces. And yeah, of course, it excluded a lot of people who cannot be the voting subjects and could not participate in this referendum in the end and could not vote on it.
You are now writing your dissertation, probably have gathered the most important findings, wrapping up. Is there anything from this that you would like to pass on to practice, to authorities, to those who are most involved in urban planning?
So, yes, there is.
To say the least. Okay.
To say the least. I think, you know, next to all the theoretical findings and how we look at our empirical data in these processes of writing up a dissertation, there's often things that in our heads we formulate a little differently that we, with a different audience in mind, and in this sense with sort of people, practitioners and politicians and people who in the end make the calls. And I think, you know, theory aside, the city of Zurich needs sort of these spaces of possibility, like these land reserves, that can absorb or deal with the unexpected. That will always happen, sort of beyond the statistics of how the city will grow in this linear way. There's all these, let's say, curveballs. And we've seen that in the past couple of years, even with the pandemic and with, for instance, the influx of refugees from the war in Ukraine, or a lot of other refugees as well. And for instance, one of the examples that I have here is that a part of the lot that I look at, the larger one, is sort of this cemented space that is used by the municipality for, let's say, larger events and different usages. A couple months ago, it was decided that a new housing for refugees, sort of this emergency housing, was going to be built there out of shipping containers. That was sort of put into a plan, and this was going to happen over the course of the next couple of months. And in the meantime, one of the largest squats actually in Europe was dismantled, the Koch Areal. And the people who had to move there sort of left without any other option on where to move their livelihood, moved to this precise lot. Politicians on the more conservative side have tried to instigate a conflict between, so what, now who is going to live here? Is it going to be these squatters? Don't we need this space for refugees? And what about this big project that is going to come here? And I think this is an excellent example to show that the city needs these spaces of, let's say, a vagueness or supposed emptiness to absorb and to do something sort of as a buffer for all of these little changes that have big impacts that happen sort of in between these larger transformations. I think this is something that I would really like to convey to practitioners and politicians and people who actually make the decisions. The development of every little single parcel in the city for profit or for housing or for whatever it is, maybe is not necessary, because we need actually what is necessary is to keep some spaces to be able to react to the future that happens every day.
There is an opportunity to get your ideas to authorities or urban planners, I would say. It's the 10th of May. It's an event taking place in Gleis. So Future of the Cities, City of the Future, it's called, and it's organized by the Association of Zetno. What happens there? You're also there, Sabrina.
Yes, I'm also going to be there. I'm going to moderate this event for which we invited really interesting guests. So Jennifer Diner is going to be there, an anthropologist who has worked on urban planning, on urban futures as well. Claudia Sinatra, an architect and planner whose interest lies with feminist interventions in urban future making. And Anna Juhagwitz, who I'm very excited is going to join us as well, is an urban activist who I've worked with during my field work and who's going to bring in the perspective of activism as well. And we're really going to discuss these issues, who gets to be part of making future of a city and of Zurich in particular, because we're all based here. And yeah, I think it's going to be exciting. We're going to talk about precisely these markers of difference, the ideas that circulate in a city, why they circulate, why sometimes they fail to circulate. I'm very excited for it.
Looking forward to this talk. I could ask you many more questions, but we are coming to a close. So last question for those interested and who can't attend the event, but still want to delve deeper into the topic. Do you have some recommended reading?
Yes. So a book that I always like to recommend is Leslie Kern's Feminist City. It's a very short and beautiful book to read, very easy to read as well. And what we see there is that feminist cities or feminist aspects to cities are already very much happening sort of in the underbelly of cities. And she really thinks about how to make these ideas more viable on a larger scale. So there is a sort of future making elements to it. And then, you know, since this is for Zetno and we're anthropologists, you and I wanted to recommend two ethnographies that deal with this issue of the future of the city. And one of them is Back to the Post-Industrial Future by Felix Ringel, who writes about the shrinking city, the fastest shrinking city in East or former East Germany, former GDR, Hoyerswerda. The other one is one that I think you also know because we talked about it at length, Ecologies of Comparison by Timothy Choi. Ethnography about development of the new territories in Hong Kong and endangerment and how environmental activists have sort of made their voices heard.
Wonderful and very informative, Sabrina. Thank you for answering all my questions.
Thank you for having me.